You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, nerding fans. Welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 479, and we're here to talk about Notre Dame's victory over Michigan. Randall, you're here as well. You were at the game, and I want to get your take on being at the game. I know you saw some interactions with some Michigan and Notre Dame fans, and you have some strong thoughts on that. But before we get into all that, how's your day? How are you feeling today?
Oh, great. It's such a relief to be prepping for a podcast, a recap of a game, a big game for Notre Dame, and it was win. None of this talk about, oh, Notre Dame can't win the big games. Notre Dame, on and on. It was an amazing win, much better than I expected, and it always makes for a better day podcasting.
I do agree with you on there. And because it's a big game, I feel like we can pull more from it than a game, a Ball State game. But, of course, it is the first game, so things are going to change as the season goes on. But let's just start with... we're going to talk about the question that the national media, of course, talks about, which is, well, is the question, is Michigan really that good? Which always comes up, and rightfully so, because you don't know last year, Notre Dame going into the 2017 season, you don't know if they're going to be a really good team. And the questions were asked about Notre Dame after Georgia beat Notre Dame in the first part of the season. Well, is Notre Dame really that good? And so you don't really know for sure. So that question is legitimate, and we're going to give our thoughts on that. We're going to talk about some things we got right, some things we got wrong. But let's start with your thoughts on the Michigan fan base, Randall.
Well, as the week went on last week, I was more and more irritated with the Michigan fan base, just listening to Michigan podcasts and hearing things from Michigan fans. And they were very confident and cocky about it. Like, it was just annoying. You know, I've obviously been in on the Notre Dame-Michigan rivalry, but not like it was back. I know there's older people absolutely hate Michigan, and they were part of the rivalry longer ago. And I kind of figured out why. And being at the game, it was a different atmosphere being there. I mean, you were... we knew Tony was with me, and we were out in the Joyce Center, the parking lot, and there was obviously some stuff going on. There was cops around, and then later we found out that down the street, actually, at one of the tailgate parties, there was a stabbing. I don't have details. I don't know who was involved, if it was a Michigan fan, Notre Dame fan. I don't know, but obviously stuff got heated, and there was a stabbing there. And then we went into the Joyce Center, and there's a huge fight. We walked into this huge fight, and they were swinging. We thought about waiting and trying to help stop it, but the guys were a little too big and swinging a little too hard. And they actually knocked over one of the ushers. Luckily, he didn't. It was an old guy, and he didn't hit his head, luckily. But that's when everybody's just like, okay. I think they kind of realized that this is getting out of hand, and they dispersed. Weren't quite sure where. They just kind of all of a sudden disappeared before the cops got there. But Tony actually made it. WSBT did tweet out the video of that yesterday, and you can see he's back there. He looks like he's getting ready to wade in. But it was Michigan fans. Not all of them were. There was a couple Notre Dame guys. I have no clue what the fight was, why it started, but there was quite a few guys wearing yellow there. And even during the game, it's just some fans in front of us got ushered out. It was Michigan guys. Obviously, we all know how Notre Dame fans are about sitting and standing, and a lot of that has changed, but it was during a timeout, or it was a break in the game, and everybody was sitting down waiting. These two Michigan guys just kept standing there, and there's an older couple behind them said, hey, you know, can you sit down? And they turned around, and they started cussing and swearing at them, flipping them off right in their face, and like, we're Michigan fans, we don't sit down. Anyways, the ushers came in and escorted them out. They also took the couple out that they were harassing. I don't know if they were trying to get the whole sort of what was going on. But just stuff like that. Which, I will say this, the tickets we got were kind of in enemy territory. We're in the corner. We were in the southeast corner, below the Michigan band. But there was a lot of Michigan fans in that area, more than the rest of the stadium. But that's kind of how the whole... That's just, you get a different vibe from them than other games. I mean, I've been to, you know, USC is a big rival in my opinion, but this is just completely different.
Okay, and I can understand wanting to stand for the game. I get that, and I do support it, standing. But during a timeout, and even if someone would ask me to sit, I would never cuss them out and flip them off. I would just tell them, hey, I'm here to yell and to be loud and cheer my team on. I want to stand. I'm sorry you can't see, but you should go watch it at home.
Well, and there were obviously not everybody's like that. There was a Michigan guy, his son, were sitting right in front of us, and we were talking with them. And he said, yeah, he had Michigan gear on. He said they've had four generations of Michigan alumni, and then his daughter decided to go to Notre Dame, and she's actually on the band.
Okay.
But he did wear his Michigan gear, so he was like, well, whatever, you can go to, if you want to go to Notre Dame, you can go to Notre Dame. And there's a lot of good fans, too. But I'm saying just the whole vibe and atmosphere is different than other games.
Yeah.
And
I'm glad you said that. We know there are Michigan fans that, you know, are classy and aren't a-holes.
Yeah, but it helped. I wouldn't have wanted to see what would happen if Michigan would have won the game. But... Oh no! I mean, it was good. I was very impressed with the green out. Exceeded. I rewatched the game, and it didn't look like as much green when you're watching it. When you were in the stadium in the game, there was a whole lot of green. It was a great turn. I was very impressed. I wasn't sure how it would turn out. It seemed like most people that weren't wearing green were maybe older people that aren't on social media. Probably didn't hear much about it. And
did they pass out? Towels.
They did the student section.
Okay.
Which, we were talking about that. Tickets are very expensive for Notre Dame games. You can't tell me you can spend a couple bucks on a towel or a shirt. It kind of frustrates me a little bit. I mean, they had a good turnout yesterday. But instead of, you know, you go, Penn State does their whiteout, you know, they got shirts there. I mean, there's different things like that. Well, Notre Dame is selling $30 Under Armour shirts to try to get green into the Irish wear green were for like $30. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But whatever. It was very good. I was very impressed. You know, Notre Dame, they had a lot of green lighting in there as well, and they did a great job.
All right, let's talk about football.
I will point this out with the Michigan fans. Just today, there's kind of been some controversy on the Michigan side. One of the Big Ten Network guys, Braylon Edwards, is actually a former Michigan wide receiver, worked for the Big Ten Network, and he had tweeted out calling out some of the players and said the team is trash, and used some language. I didn't see that tweet, and he used some language that they didn't print in the Detroit press. But Harbaugh was obviously asked about it, and he basically said, if you're going to call up players, you have to go through me, and it's kind of a big deal. And the Big Ten Network did suspend him for breaking social media guidelines. But as you can see, it just kind of adds to it. But anyways, Notre Dame came away with a win, and it was huge. And I should say this. I think we should start a fund. Whenever Tony and I go to a game, we were at the USC game last year as well. So the big games, I think we should be there. Because so far it's been going very well when we are. So keep that in mind, Ruben.
Well, I'll keep it in mind for sure. All things are considered. Okay. As far as football, the question is always asked, you know, when two big rivals or two big teams come together, highly ranked teams at the beginning of the season, before there's history for that season, the question is always asked, well, is the loser really that good? And is the winner really, did the winner really overcome that grit of an obstacle? So what are your thoughts? Notre Dame's defense really held Michigan's offense in check for, you know, almost the entire game. Without that special teams touchdown, this would have been considered a blowout for most of the game.
Yeah. It, in my mind, I hate how all of a sudden people are just saying, oh, well, Michigan isn't as good as they were. That's always how it is with Notre Dame. If you're a Notre Dame fan, you know exactly how it is. They never want to give credit to Notre Dame.
I think that's true across the board. For example, Notre Dame, Georgia, or even Alabama just destroyed Louisville. And I don't think Louisville is a top 15 caliber team. But the question is, well, is Louisville, are they just going to be a bottom feeder this year in the ACC?
Well, that I have to agree with, because Brian Van Gorder is their defensive coordinator. So I'm not surprised there. But Notre Dame, here's the thing, Notre Dame wasn't getting the love before the game for some reason.
Yeah,
and
the spread.
Even now, it's Michigan just isn't as good. Michigan defense is very good, and I feel like Notre Dame, my take on the game is that Notre Dame is much improved. I mean, you look at that defense, there was, you know, often we want that pass rusher out there. Here, there was a rotation, and I wasn't even worried about what the rotation was, because you knew they could bring pressure on the quarterback. That has never happened at Notre Dame. I mean, since I've been a fan, you know, it's, yeah, you have your Stephon Tuitt, and, you know, in 2012, but then, you know, the rotation behind him, you know, there's always a drop-off, and the next guy's in. Here, they got four pass rushers, then they have Jerry Tillery inside. I mean, they were just bringing pressure all night, and you didn't even really care if it was the first string or second string guys, because they were doing it. The defense, the safeties are much better. There's, clearly, this Notre Dame defense is a lot better than last year.
Even if Michigan's offense isn't very good, and I think it's probably not very good, the defense, I think there is that we saw enough that just what you said, they have the players to bring pressure. You have you're probably your two primary guys from last year were probably Dalen Hayes and Julian Okwara, and now this year you have guys stepping up as far as getting pressure on the quarterback and getting in the backfield. Khalid Kareem, he had two sacks in the game. You have
Ade Ogundiji.
Yeah, there's just multiple guys, like you said, that are getting in the backfield and getting pressure or sacks on the quarterback.
Yeah, and I will say this, with the Michigan offense, I think they were a little overhyped, because it seemed like things you heard about Shea Patterson, oh, he can run, he can do this and that. Well, if you start breaking, you know, look at his stats. If you broke down his stats from last year, I was doing more of it Saturday while I was waiting for the game, but just his, he does not run the ball. He is, the reason he's considered like a mobile quarterback or run threat is because he's very good at throwing on the run, getting out of the pocket and throwing the run. We saw that. He did that on Saturday. But he's not a run. He has like, I think he had negative yardage in rushing last year. Then we break down his game-to-game stats. He played some horrible team, put up huge numbers, but then when he played ranked teams, he did not do good at all. He had about double the interceptions to touchdowns. And I think the people that were giving Michigan hype weren't breaking it down enough to see what was going on there, and it just seemed like, oh, we got a star quarterback coming in. You know, this is finally, Michigan can, this defense can play with a lead, and just, it's just going to be so much better, and it wasn't. So if anything, I would say they even have, well, I'm not going to, who cares about Michigan, what they do going on about quarterbacks and so forth, but I think if you really got down and broke down the game, it seemed like Michigan was getting a lot more love than they should have, just because it wasn't broken down enough. I mean,
another area where I don't think you can take anything away from Notre Dame is with their offensive line. I think they played really well considering who Michigan has in their front seven. They didn't have a lot of success running the football that we've been used to, you know, from last year. But against good teams last year, against Georgia, was it against Stanford? You know, Notre Dame didn't have 250 yards rushing and 6 yards on average against everyone. Against better teams, that is going to drop. And I think they did well with who they were playing against on the ground.
Yeah, and before we go further into the breaking down the game, Chase Winovich, which had a very good game. I mean, it seemed like everybody was always like, who's that guy in the backfield? Was he number 15 in the backfield? After the game, he said, you know, he doesn't understand. Here's his quote. I'm not really sure where they beat us. I'm still kind of confused. In the locker room, I looked around kind of clueless at how we lost that game. I don't feel like they dominated us in any fashion of the ball. But like I said, ultimately, they made plays when they needed to. Credit to them. But
actually,
go ahead.
That's a good place to start. Where did Notre Dame win this game? It was Brandon Wimbush. The opening drive, Notre Dame had a rush and then a pass that fell incomplete. And it looked like, here we go. It's going to be three and out. And I had that fear. But Brandon, and the play calling was great. You had Chase Claypool kind of look like he was going in motion into the backfield, but instead ran a shallow route, caught it, had space to make it to the first down marker. So great play call. And but then Brandon Wimbush was also poised enough, even after two failed plays, was poised enough to make an easy pass. Some of the short passes we're concerned about. And I still don't think that not all the questions are answered as far as Brandon Wimbush and his accuracy by any means. But he did make the plays needed to beat a very good defense, a very good Michigan team. And a great play call, too. I mean, it was just the play call was spot on to convert that down and continue moving down and score a touchdown on the opening drive.
Yeah, I think it was a great game plan. They needed to do that in the beginning because, obviously, I think they knew that Michigan's defense was going to get better as the game went on. And it was interesting to hear Brandon Wimbush talk about how they came out in the second half with not enough energy, like they kind of... They had a good lead going in, and they just kind of slacked a little bit in the second half, and he said somebody's got to change that. So I'm not sure who he had in mind, but I think it is something. It was good to happen this game. It was a little bit of a wake-up call for this Notre Dame team.
I remember those comments as well, and... I mean, in the third quarter, let's see here. There was an interception that looks like that was the first series ended up being interception, and then they went three and out, punted, and then they did have a 10-play drive that ended in a field goal. I don't think the coaching staff was thinking they need to score another 21 points in the second half. But I wasn't too disappointed in the second half performance just because they did what was needed. They didn't need to score 50 points to win this game. They needed to grind it out, and I felt like they were able to do that well enough. Yeah, it would have been nice if they, instead of the couple three and outs that they had, that they were able to convert a couple first downs and keep on chewing more clock. But I wasn't super concerned about it just because... I felt like if they would have had to, they could have pulled some tricks out of the playbook and converted some more downs if they really, really needed to. If they needed to score some points.
It's good to see that they are aware of it. That is something that they – it's not like we're the ones talking about it and they're not. It's the other way around.
And hopefully – I'm glad Brandon Wimbush thinks that, hey, we need to keep on scoring points and moving the ball.
Yeah.
Did you see, when you rewatched the game, did you see that one point, I'm pretty sure it was in the second half, Brandon Wimbush was coming off the sideline, and one of the offensive linemen, I forget who it was now, it looked like he was trying to console him a little bit, like trying to give him a handshake, an awkward handshake, and then a pat on the back. Did you catch any of that?
Oh, it was Robert Hainsey.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure. I know I saw that, and I wasn't quite sure what was going on there, but it was good to see them, you know, they're obviously...
It looked like he was trying to... give Brandon a little pickup and tell him, hey, we'll go out there and get the next one. Let's continue talking about some things we got right, some things we got wrong. Elohi Gilman, Randall, you were right. I was wrong. The guy had two pass breakups on third down. The one was in the end zone. And then he also had a tackle for loss on the opening drive. that helped force Michigan punt. The guy's a baller. It seemed he was always either in the backfield or just around the ball. I thought he made a bunch of big plays, and there's no question he's going to be playing a lot this year.
Yeah, he made a huge impact. You actually noticed the safeties making huge plays during this game.
He also did miss an interception, but hey.
Yeah, he should have had that, but he can't be too tough on him. I mean, he also did very well against the big tight ends. I mean, he was reaching in front of them, knocking the ball loose, and he made quick decisions. Like, if he saw that something was going to happen in the backfield, he was back there. I mean, he doesn't hesitate. He has good instincts, and he makes up his mind in a hurry and gets to the ball.
Are you worried at all? Did you get any feedback from the Michigan fans? Do they think some of those should have been called pass interference on those two pass breakups he had on third downs?
Oh, of course. I mean, that's kind of what I saw was, calls here and there. But I don't think you always have that on both sides. I mean, team, we fuss about calls when Notre Dame loses, and it's just normal.
All right.
They got some that should not have been called. I mean, that one drive, their touchdown drive, actually, the pass interference on Drew Tranquil.
Yeah.
That made no sense. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, if the ball would have been in play, even then it wasn't really pass interference. It was good defense, but the receiver, they weren't even close to the ball. I mean, it wasn't even a catchable ball by the receiver. It was way short. It didn't matter what Tranquil, I mean, if anything, Tranquil would have slowed him down. Let's say Tranquil had pass interference, would have slowed him down. Technically, he should have been even further down the field. So that was a horrible call, and it was on their touchdown drive. So, but.
And then one other thing that I feel I just got right was the 50-50 balls. I do think that was the difference in this game. Without Alize Mack hanging on to that ball, was maybe not necessarily a 50-50 ball, but held on to it when he was targeted. And then, of course, the Chris Fink touchdown catch, that could have been intercepted, but it wasn't. And Chris Fink came up with the ball. And even Chase Claypool on one of the first two drives helped knock a potential interception out of the Michigan defender's hands. So I feel like that was huge in this game. Those 50-50 balls, Notre Dame won more of those, and I feel like that was a big reason that Notre Dame won this game.
So are you more confident in the receivers now?
I am. They made tough catches. Even was it Cole Kmet that caught that one swing pass that went for no yards or maybe even a loss? He probably shouldn't even have caught it. But being able to hang on to that, Alize Mack, of course, he did drop one then as well. But hanging on to that ball, Chris Fink, Miles Boykin's one catch is a ball that probably would have been dropped last year.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. You were a little worried. You were not confident in the receivers at all, but I think everybody should be confident after seeing what they did. They didn't have a lot of catches or a lot of yards, but they made the plays they needed
to. The balls that were there, they caught, and that is where I was wrong. I didn't have any confidence in this wide receiver unit, and they looked very good on Saturday.
And with the stats, if you just look at the numbers, they don't look that great, but Michigan defense is very good, and so I don't think you can really judge. This is going to be one of the best defenses that they're going to face this year, and so you can't really look at the numbers. We even talked about that before the game, that this is not a good game to look at the stats afterwards, but they made the plays they needed to. I mean, yeah, there were some missed ones, but there's always, you're not going to play a perfect game. That Chris Fink catch was just unreal. So,
and do you feel like Notre Dame did run the ball effectively enough? Like, would you say that was one of the keys to the game? Or, because I would have said, no, they didn't run it effective, but they kept on running it, and they needed to, and that helped.
I think that was the big thing, that they stuck to it, kept going. They weren't getting big plays. There was a lot of complaints from the fans during the game about, he should have cut up field. He should have cut up field. Why is he going outside? Well, then all of a sudden, the next play, they went right up the middle for 10 yards. And I think that's what Notre Dame, what they were trying to do. They were trying to set up for that run. And so they played very smart. They were new. I think the coaches knew they weren't going to get a lot of yardage just running the ball in every play. But they did a good job of setting up a big run. And even though us as fans watching it were like, why doesn't this happen? Why don't you do that? They were setting up for those runs, and they did it worked. So.
And then special teams, we both thought that Notre Dame's kicking team would be a huge factor and could be the difference in this team. Well, special teams overall went in Michigan's favor. I mean, they had a touchdown off of kickoff return. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I figured this game would be much closer, and I said it would come down to special teams. And honestly, if the Notre Dame special teams would have played better, this would have been a bigger win for Notre Dame. I mean, the kickoff, right at the beginning, Jonathan Dewar's kickoff was terrible. And I think they were trying to pin it inside. You know, they talked about that in fall camp about, you know, putting it in the, you know, 4-yard line, and trying to make the other team decide whether to run it out or fair catch with the new rule. And I don't know if that's what they were trying to do in that first one, but it didn't work, went out of bounds. And then the second one was right up the middle, and Brian Kelly said, you can't kick it up the middle like that.
So,
and
they're trying to kick it in the corner, but obviously in bounds.
Yeah. Justin Yoon came out and in the second half and did the kickoff and just kicked him out of the end zone. So I liked the idea that they had three different kickers focused on three different things, but I don't know. I mean, and especially I still like that because the guys struggled. The less they have to think about, Justin Yoon did very good.
Mm-hmm.
He made a huge difference in this game, made a long field, 48 yards. But even Newsom was kind of up and down, had a horrible punt. I mean, the times that Michigan scored, you know, the kicking could have made a difference. And so I think if they would have had a better day on special teams, this would have been an even bigger win for Notre Dame.
And I do hope that Jonathan Dewar does get another opportunity. This was a big stage, and I'm pretty confident I'm expecting to see him against Ball State this upcoming week.
Yeah.
All right. So go through the different position groups, or did you have any topics before that you wanted to cover?
Just one more thing before. I thought it was kind of interesting that Brian Kelly hadn't released a depth chart, just kind of an extra jab at Michigan before the game. The depth chart they were given in the press box before the game had a whole bunch of former Notre Dame, basically the all-star team, and just kind of playing their game because Michigan, obviously, Harbaugh likes to do that, and so it was kind of funny that he did that. But, yeah. I'm ready to go with the position groups.
All right, let's start with Brandon Wimbush, the quarterback. And I do feel like Brandon Wimbush, we touched on it a little bit. I feel like he played a really good game. I thought he stepped up in the pocket a couple key times to avoid getting pressure and sacked. He had a great run on a third and very, very long, converted that. I just think... the problem is that he's going to get hurt, and he did get hurt, but Ian Book came in and was able to – we scored with Ian Book in the under center or taking the snaps.
Yeah, I thought – well, after that game, everything should quiet down about Brandon Wimbush's quarterback. I mean, there's still people out there. There's things he missed, whatever. He played very good. He completed 54% of his passes. So he's over 50%.
Against a good defense.
And that is actually the highest completion percentage against Michigan all of last year. Well, there was one with Penn State's quarterback had a higher rating, but clearly he had a very good running back to help with him, you know, help open things up as well. But quarterbacks don't complete passes against Michigan's defense. And in the last 2 years, I think Coach D was the one that tweeted this out, that in the last 2 years, quarterbacks have averaged 46% completion against Michigan's defense.
And these passes that Brandon threw, they weren't all little screen passes or dink and dunks. A lot of these were deep balls down the field. And sometimes the one pass in particular where it was either, it was unclear if it was to Chase or if it was to
maybe Miles Boykin.
Because, and it looked like there was a miscommunication on the route because you saw them talking afterwards. And so some of those...
That had to do with receivers.
Some of those aren't just, oh, Brian can't throw accurately. That isn't always the case.
Yeah. And he made the short...
Not Brian, Brandon, I mean.
He made the short passes out to the sideline, screen passes across the middle. And the thing I liked the most was that after the game, he was very confident. Post-game press conference. He actually was in there before Brian Kelly even did the... And he's very confident in what he can do. He was still asked a very awkward question about what, you know, if he's gotten better since last year. And I'm just like, just stop. Let the guy play his game. He's doing very good. And it was just very awkward. Brandon kind of asked what the question was, and the guy was just like, your play. I mean, what has improved is your play. Has it improved? And...
Well, you can
even
ask.
Fans, it's never going to go. It's going to be hard for it to go. Any time that Brandon struggles a little bit, it's going to be, you know, it's time because we know what we have in a backup. There's always going to be that because you know what you actually have in a backup. But he did very well, and I think he answered a lot of questions, and he's obviously clearly the starter, and the things he did in that game, running the ball, the plays he made, getting away from sacks. I mean, there was one sack where he should have been.
Yeah.
It was him and the defender. Did a spin move, got away, and threw it downfield. It was Claypool. Made a big play.
And I don't think on that play, he wasn't holding the ball out like a loaf of bread, like we saw Everett Golson do so many times, at least from memory.
Yeah.
I thought he had it tucked pretty well. Watching it in real time, I wasn't worried, oh, the ball's going to fly out of his hand.
Yeah.
But he was still able to spin out and make a play to Chase.
Yeah, and so he did really good. I mean, on the interception he did have, he got hit. I mean, he felt the pressure coming, and maybe it was kind of maybe shouldn't have thrown that up there. But, you know, it wasn't like he had plenty of time and just, you know, made a bad throw. I mean, he was getting hit. He was getting pressure, too. But he did a very good job.
It seemed like he was willing a little more. Some of the throws were maybe a little more risky. Like the throw to Chase Claypool that was incomplete in the opening drive. There was a window there, but the safety closed it very, very quickly. And it should have been thrown a little bit further to the sideline. Should have been thrown out a little bit more. But I'm not disappointed to see him make some of those throws. The Chris Fink throw, you know, that one, maybe he wouldn't have made that or would have attempted that throw last year. And the throw to Alize Mack. Both of them, but maybe he doesn't attempt those throws last year.
Yeah. And there are some of those throws, too. He had one across the middle to, it was Claypool, but Claypool kind of got caught up, and it looked a little slow turning the corner. And it was a time thing. I think that what we wanted him to do was throw the ball and let the receiver get there. And on some of those throws, he did do that, and the receivers or even the running backs didn't quite get there in time. So he's definitely doing better in that and versus, you know, waiting till the receiver is at a certain spot, and he's taking chances. But, you know, the plays that Book came in, I mean, that's pretty good rating for Book. Comes in on two plays, and both plays are touchdowns. The first one, you know, we thought Brandon Wimbush was kind of shook up, but he got poked in the eye. I mean, you couldn't see that from the stands, but clearly got poked in the eye and came out later with a shield on his helmet. But came in, and you kind of expected him to maybe throw the ball, but hand it off, it's a touchdown. Well, then they did it again. It seemed like a weird spot to bring Book in over Wimbush because Wimbush is very good in the red zone running the ball. I mean, he set the record last year for touchdowns, rushing touchdowns for a quarterback. So it's kind of a weird spot, but hey, it worked. And maybe that Michigan was expecting him to throw the ball when they bring in Book. They thought, oh, he's going to throw it, and kind of caught them off guard when they ran it in.
Right. Brandon made the comment that him and Ian are best friends, and right now I think the dynamic, the relationship between them is fine, and the way things are working with Ian coming in sometimes, even if, like Brian Kelly talked about, even if Ian's not injured, but if they need a spark or need something different, bringing Ian in, I think that'll work for now. But that could change over the course of a season, and it definitely could change next year if both players are coming back. So I think it is going to be fine this year, but I don't think it will work necessarily year over year. I do think it takes a special relationship between the coaches and the players involved, quarterbacks involved.
Yeah.
All right, shall we move over and talk? Or Ian Book, he didn't attempt a pass, but he was in there and looked very competent, looked confident, looked fine. Let's move on then, talk about the receivers. Here's the big question mark for me. Boykin had a catch on that opening drive, 28 yards, was targeted twice. Fink, obviously, the long touchdown, had three catches for 55 yards and led the Irish receivers. And then Claypool also had three for 47 yards.
Boykin's catch was very impressive. I mean, he even got a pass interference call and made the catch. So, like I said, the tough catches, they were making that. We did see Kevin Austin in there a little bit. Didn't make a catch, but he was in there and over Michael Young. Michael Young did play some, but he wasn't as – I don't think he was even targeted. But Kevin Austin, I think he came in when Boykin had a cramp. It was one of the first times I noticed that he was in there. But they look much better. There was a lot of scares in this game with the cramps. And there was a couple twisted ankles. You thought it was, you saw a player go down, you're like, oh no. But then by the end of the game, you're like, oh, it's just a cramp. Whenever someone went down, it's like, it's just a cramp. So he felt relieved at the end of the game knowing that everybody was having cramping issues. But I thought the receivers did well, and they'll continue to get better.
Well, there was one broken leg injury.
Yeah.
Tagovailoa. And we'll get to that in the defensive line then. Well,
Boykin, I'll just say that touchdown, he should have had a touchdown. We didn't find out that the penalty was actually an ineligible receiver downfield. We thought they were going to call out of bounds, and we were watching on the Jumbotron, and we were like, no, that should be good. But he was the one that kind of made the mistake. He should have been back, from what I understand, he should have been back off the line because he was up on the line and covered up Komet, and when Komet went downfield, he was the ineligible receiver. So there was a mistake. You know, they got to clean up some of that. That should have been a touch. Boykin should have had a touchdown there. But, you know, even clearly he had good awareness. He stayed in bounds. I mean, if it would have been a touchdown, I think he would have stayed in bounds. Claypool had that sideline catch. So they did a great job. Just got to clean up some of those small things.
Running backs, I was surprised to see Jafar Armstrong come out and take the first snaps and be the primary running back. He had 15 carries, had a handful of catches, had two catches, but I expected him to take over just from what we were hearing from camp. I expected him to eventually take over. I didn't expect it against Michigan.
Well, yeah, I agree, but supposedly he was told a week ago that he was going to be the starter.
Okay.
And I think he did really well. It looks like he wastes some movement sometimes trying to juke out the other player, but he did a good job, and I want to see what he can do, you know, maybe against Ball State and Vanderbilt, just kind of his, if he has some breakaway speed, just kind of see him get into the open field. I mean, it's going to be hard to do that against Michigan, but I thought he did a very good job. And then Tony Jones also, he definitely looks slimmer than he did last year.
Tony Jones looked way better and ran with more, I think, explosiveness than what I expected.
Yeah, and he went through a couple players, too. I mean, he was lowering his shoulder, hitting players, and got some tough yards. So I think they'll be a very good duo, and it'll just get that much better once Dexter gets back.
And I expected these roles to be reversed.
Yeah.
Expected Tony Jones to get the 15 carries, and Armstrong maybe to get the nine. Avery Davis was back there quite a bit, and he was targeted multiple times. He carried the ball twice, was targeted, I think twice. Yes, was targeted twice, had one catch for 4 yards. Just didn't seem to ever get enough space. He was one of the players that if he would have, he didn't connect on a pass from Wimbush, and it just looked like it was just a little bit off. He was just didn't get turned around quite quickly enough, or was held up a little bit when he was taking off from the line of scrimmage. But I still think he is a dynamic player, and I hope he's a weapon that they'll continue to try to use, just because I think he's dynamic, and in space, I think he can be special.
Yeah, I was surprised how much he was used in this game. That one pass where it was over a little bit, he kind of got caught up. He stayed and blocked, and he kind of got caught up. And I think it's going to be a little bit of an issue with him being a smaller guy playing that position. And Brian Kelly's talked about it too, like he's not built like Jafar is. And then he also got a pass interference call because basically the Michigan defense just took him out, just tackled him before he even had the ball. So they were trying to target him on that as well. But yeah, I was surprised how much they actually used him in this game.
Tight ends, we should have talked about this with the receivers, but the tight ends had 2 catches between them. Mack had the one for 26 yards, and then Komet had one for -1. They weren't targeted as much as I expected. Mack was targeted twice. And when I say targeted, I mean the ball was thrown to them, not that they had their heads blown off. But do you expect that to change as time goes on, or what's your take on that?
Yeah, there's one point where they had 4 tight ends in there, and Alize Mack had that one. I can't believe he hung on to that ball with the targeting. I mean, it looked like he was out, and I figured he would just kind of drop it. But very impressive. Then, of course, we saw the one that I think he should have caught.
Oh, yeah.
It hit him. It went right through his hands and hit him in the chest. The defender had his arm and was right there, but it hit him in the chest, and he should have caught that. But I think the tight ends are just going to keep getting used more and more throughout the year. And they had to be used quite a bit for blocking in this game because of the Michigan defensive line. So I think that made a difference. They weren't quite as involved in the passing game because they were needed to help stop these defensive ends and helping out Leon Meichenberg and Hainsey on the outside there. So I think some of that will change. Brock Wright was in there as a fullback. I thought maybe Sweeney would be used more for that. It might be down the road.
Well, I thought Sweeney was in there as a fullback once.
It might be.
I couldn't actually see a clear number, so yeah. I'm not 100% sure.
But, yeah, I mean, there was some Brock Wright. No, it was, sorry, Cole Komet. There was one play where he was kind of on the outside, and it was an option. Brandon Wimbush could have thrown it to him or take off. Brandon Wimbush took off, and Komet just kind of hung around. He should have started blocking for him, and Wimbush got caught. Komet was too hesitant and waited around instead of trying. It was like, basically, he was like going to get the ball, or he wasn't going to do anything is what it seemed like. And he didn't do anything, and then Wimbush got caught pretty quickly. But overall, I mean, there's not a... Mack did get a penalty. He was in motion on the one play when he shouldn't have been, and they got a penalty on that. But, yeah.
Offensive line, like I said, I don't expect a ton compared to what we had last year from the offensive line, but against Michigan, I feel like they played really well.
Yeah, I agree. But more when you're talking about the offensive line, people think, oh, you're replacing 2 first, top 10 picks. Well, you can either look at it, yeah, they're replacing 2 good guys, or you can look at it as these guys are really good, and they could be second round picks, but they didn't get on the field because there was top 10 picks on the field. So I think that kind of gets lost sometimes when you look at the replacement. Yeah, clearly they're not Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey out there, but I think it kind of gets lost. You just look at it as, oh, they're replacing 2 good guys, when the better the guys are they're replacing means that these guys are probably that much better too.
And these Eichenberg, he could be junior Mike McGlinchey.
Yeah.
You know, and so junior Mike McGlinchey wasn't nearly as good as senior Mike McGlinchey, but he was still very, very solid.
Yeah. I think Hainsey had the roughest day out of them. It seemed like there was always mostly Winovich, but often if there was some getting around it, if the first guy was down on Haynesy's side. He did struggle with some cramps, and that's when you saw Kramer move out and Lug came in and played for a little bit at guard. But Eichenberg did very well. We did not see number three, which obviously I think he might had a little bit of an injury. But I thought they did very well. Sam Mustafer missed the block that he should have had. We all saw if he would have got the block, there would have been a big gain on the play. He missed that. But Bars, I would say Bars played the best. There's one play on the Jafar Armstrong. I think it was his second touchdown. It was one of his touchdowns. He took three guys out of the play. Basically because he was pushing two guys and the third guy ran into them, but he took out three defensive players out of the play. And he also threw Winovich to the ground the one time. Quite a few of the players were saying that Winovich was chirping and saying a bunch of stuff during the game, and finally Barr just threw him to the ground. So Nelson did stuff like that. But anyways, he also tweeted out or sent out a video on his Twitter of when Winovich got destroyed.
Bars.
Yeah. So I thought he did very well, but I would give them a good grade. We weren't sure what to expect against this Michigan D-line, but they did a good job of slowing them down.
And let's talk about the defense. Without the special teams touchdown, this defense would have, or the defense only gave up 10 points, which is, I think, regardless who you're going against, whether it's a bad Michigan offense or whether it's Ball State, if you hold a team to 10 offensive points, your defense did something right. And so I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about this defense, a lot of reason to be excited about Mike Lee and where this defense is headed.
Clark Lee. Yeah. Like I said, we talked about earlier, the defensive ends. I mean, there's so many guys. Finally, there's so many guys on here that can bring pressure on the quarterback. And you're not as worried about having the starters in there playing almost all the snaps. I mean, they were rotating guys all the time, and they just kept bringing pressure, which Michigan's O-line isn't that good. But they did a very good job. Obviously, with Tagovailoa Mosa's injury, broken leg, you know, that's going to change some things because there's a lot of hype around him. But Brian Kelly mentioned that Mike Treadway will get more snaps. And they even had true freshman Jason Adamalola in there. And he also mentioned that Jonathan Bonner will cross-train for that. But they have, I mean, you're not quite as worried as if it was some of the other positions because they got a good rotation there. The one play, their touchdown drive there in the fourth quarter, the one big game, one of their biggest games of the game was when Kurt Heinisch and Jason Adamalola were in there, and they just didn't get as much pressure on that play. So, you know, you can kind of see there is some drop off there, but these guys did very well. Aquara, the interception, we've had so many complaints about dropping linemen into coverage, but Aquara did a very good job, got the interception. And he was downfield in some other plays as well, making plays. So this defensive line is way more athletic. Mike Elston has I think it was the photographer for the South Bend Tribune, got a picture of them just hammering Patterson.
It looked like three guys were hitting Patterson at the same time.
Yeah, and Elston had tweeted out and said he doesn't know who took the picture, but this is his screensaver now, so his background on his computer. So, but yeah, this is the best I've felt about Notre Dame's defensive line in a long time.
Let's talk about the linebackers. Questions were maybe asked about Tavon Coney. Is he going to be able to keep up where he left off from last year? And he led the team with tackles. He had 10 tackles, 2 quarterback hurries, and half a tackle for loss. He was targeted on some passing plays, and he gave up at least one first down on a passing play. So it's not like he's a perfect player. He has things to work on in the passing game. But Tavon Coney continues just to be a stud in there and make life difficult for, you know, opposing offenses.
Yeah. No, I think he kept running going. He was making plays. He was always around the ball, it seemed like, and cleaning things up. And the other guys, you know, Tranquil kept making – he ended up with 7 tackles. It didn't seem like you noticed him as much, but I think Coney was doing so much that it kind of overshadowed what Tranquil was doing. There was one play where Tranquil had to run to the sideline to get the offensive player. It was an open field tackle, and he made it. And definitely you could see his instincts of knowing where to go and, you know, kept him from converting the down. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it was a third. I think it was a third down. But Tranquil did get called for pass interference, but that was not pass interference. We talked about that earlier, is that short pass. That should not have been pass interference. But they did very good. Bilal made some good plays. He missed a sack that he should have. He should have had that mm-hmm. sack, but I thought he did very well. His first game as a starter.
Had a tackle for loss.
Yeah.
All right, and then cornerbacks.
They didn't have to do a whole, with this defensive line. I mean, with so much pressure, it helped them out quite a bit. There was one play, Love. There was a big passing play. The receiver went right past Love. And I think he was expecting to have safety help on there because he kind of let him get by.
I think that's the one Brian Kelly talked about where there was supposed to be some safety help.
Yeah. So that was that's something they got to work on. We've seen that before where the cornerback thought he was getting safety help and it wasn't there. But I think that's the one reason that pass was converted. I don't think it was that Love got beat. But Pride was out there. It looked like he was getting in the face when the other guys were just talking smack. He was giving it right back. So Dante Vaughn was out there, and yeah, they played a lot of defensive backs, and obviously they're going to miss Sean Crawford with his season-ending injury, but they have a much better secondary than what they have had.
And then at safety, I mean, this is exciting. I mean, Gilman just changes that unit, and we talked about him at the beginning of the podcast, but 2 big pass breakups, a big tackle for loss in the opening drive or two, finished with 10 tackles total. He's one of the studs back there.
Yeah, and even Elliott was playing way more physical. I mean, that hit he put on the tight end there at the end of the game, I mean, he just took him out. And he had some other big plays like that. I think with Gilman and with his confidence, I think it just gives the other safeties even more confidence. Coleman was out there, which he was playing the nickel a lot, but Houston Griffith even played a little bit, didn't play too much, but he was out in the field. And I think with Gilman, it's just huge. I mean, it not only does he have confidence, it boosts the confidence of the other players.
I think you're right. If they see someone else do what they're supposed to do, it's easier to do when you have an example to follow.
Yeah, exactly.
And Gilman just had a great opening game.
Exactly.
Okay. Studstill also was out there some, and he did record a tackle as well.
We'll throw this out. Yeah, I didn't mention with defensive line. Khalid Kareem said that they had figured out the snap count for Michigan, which helped them get into the backfield as quickly as they did.
I wish they wouldn't say that because...
Well, every team is different. And you mean as far as other teams, or?
Yeah, because I think it just puts more wariness on the upcoming opponents to make sure that they're more careful with their snap count.
Well, and that makes it harder for the offense. If they change it up just for the opponent, that makes it that much harder for the offense.
Maybe.
But they did some things that we hadn't seen before, and I think Clark Lee did a very good job with this defense in his first game as a defensive coordinator. We saw some things that we hadn't seen from Notre Dame defense before, and I would give him a very good grade on this game.
And one thing that we always like to see or were happy with last year was how the defense stepped up when the offense was struggling, and sometimes vice versa. And I do feel like the defense, again, when they were put in a little bit of a rough spot, they did step up and help out the offense when called to do that. And hopefully this is the kind of team where if Notre Dame's defense forces a turnover, the offense can go down and score. And if Notre Dame's offense turns it over, the defense can step up when they need to.
Yeah.
So obviously it's just exciting to start off the season like this against a big team. And now Notre Dame has a few weeks to, get comfortable, get some things figured out, iron out a few things before their next big test. But you can't take any of these upcoming opponents lightly, or you end up losing, or you end up almost losing. Exactly. like Penn State did.
Exactly.
Besides this game, Randall, did you have any thoughts from the rest of college football? Anything you were excited about, or anything that was interesting?
Not a whole lot. I didn't watch too many of the other games. It was good to see Miami get destroyed by LSU, especially because Notre Dame just beat LSU in their bowl game last year. But definitely not a Miami fan, so good to see them get kind of humiliated on a Sunday night.
I watched the Auburn-Washington game, and I just don't buy into Washington being that good of an opponent. Both teams were top 10 teams, and Auburn did win 21-16. I'm sorry, but Washington is supposed to be favored to win the Pac-12. I don't see it. And yeah. I don't know. I'm not convinced Auburn is going to be vying for a SEC championship either.
Yeah. Well, we did have some winners. There's actually two people that had the score prediction right on. I mean, usually it almost never happens that somebody picks the exact score, and then we have actually, no. The one guy I just noticed now, he said for an Irish win, but then he said Michigan. So we just have one. There was three people that had it right. The one guy had it for Michigan.
Okay.
I have it screenshot because I told him if you'd have picked Notre Dame, he would have got it right on. But there were two that were right on for Notre Dame, 24-17. On Twitter, it was Carl Tink Jr. And then on Instagram, there's one for Brandon_Ryan, and he also had 24-17. Somebody commented that they want Ryan to pick lottery numbers for them, so maybe he's got something started here. But we'll send them some coffee and an Irish Sports Talk mug.
And the way this works, we'll be sending a coupon code for you to check out on MainStreetRoasters.com. That coupon will give you 1 pound of free coffee. You place the order, put in your address and information, and then we'll include an Irish Sports Talk mug with that. Main Street Roasters is the sponsor for Irish Sports Talk this season, and so if you are interested in some fresh roasted coffee, head on over to MainStreetRoasters.com. It's the coffee I drink all the time, and it's the coffee shop I go to whenever I'm in my hometown of Napanee. So I think that's it, Randall. We've got the preview coming up. We're going to be doing our previews on Tuesday, and I think that any other announcements before we wrap this up?
I don't think so.
Head on over to the forums, forums.irishsportstalk.net. It's free to sign up. Follow us on Twitter. And if you enjoy this podcast, leave us a review on iTunes. You can just search for the podcast in the Apple Podcast directory and leave a review there. But definitely follow us on Twitter and check out the forums. Until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.